I'm a chicken fried. A cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio.
I think the board should write the Department of Interior and ask for a daily rate. You know, I know it's $45 a year, $7 for our $25 for 7 days, but there doesn't seem like any reason why we shouldn't ask the Department of Interior for a daily rate. You know, a lot of people don't that aren't on their vacation can't spend 7 days out of the beach. They can take their kid for their birthday party. So I would love to have the board support something like that for beach access as well.
This is Commissioner Mike Kohler, District 2. That includes NES Pensacola, Warrington, that kind of area, west side of Pensacola. And what he's talking about there is as a solution to the customary use, beach access, private property kind of discussion that we're having. He says, Steve Stroberger, same thing, and they're good friends. Of course, Steve used to be his district aide. Talking about, can we not get the state park to be more user-friendly, or maybe, I don't even know if it's pay something, honestly, I think you do, but, you know, could it be free for Escambia residents? And then Johnson Beach, the Gulf Islands National Seashore, it's too expensive to pay $25 just to go to the beach for one day. Can we not get a day rate, $5, something like that? Joining us now, we have Jimmy Petronas. He is our congressman for District 1, Northwest Florida. Jimmy, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So is this a conversation that you have been a part of yet, or is this something that does that seem like the kind of thing that, you know, makes sense to you to get a discounted, just a single day rate to go to the National Seashore from the Interior Department?
Yeah, I'll reach out to Cole. This isn't something he's briefed me on, but I'd be happy to work on it. But Andrew, for years, all right, so I was on the Florida cabinet. We would buy and sell land, more or less buy a lot of land or buy the development rights. And one thing that I obsessed about whenever we bought this land is it's got to have a public good. It's got to have public access.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm kind of, you know, wanting to make sure we do everything humanly possible to make this as affordable as possible for folks to access the property. I mean, this is the public's property, you know? I can see the importance of wanting to charge something to get access to it, but let's just make sure it's reasonable. I don't want to nickel. I mean, I'd prefer to try to figure out a way not to nickel and dime people to enjoy what they own in the first place.
Yeah, no, and I mean, we're so used to like Pensacola Beach, where it's the only thing you got to pay is a buck to go across the bridge, and nobody feels like that is. I mean, who cares, right? It's a buck. There's no feet across the Perdido Key Bridge. But then to go into Johnson Beach, it's, you know, oh my God, that's a lot of money just to go to the beach, right? If that's where you want to go. So good. I'd love to see you guys work on this and seeing if we can come up with at least a choice. You know, choices are always going to make things better. You guys have been working on.
I'm sure somebody's going to stir up Kohler here in the next couple minutes if he's not listening. So anyway, yeah, be glad to do it. Matter of fact, everybody that's listening is Mike's Kohler's phone number. Please call him right now and tell him Jimmy wants to help.
All right, and we'll see if the congressman can pay for the melted phone too. The Save for Success Act. This is basically opening up the opportunity for anybody who's. It's like the opposite of a student loan. If you've got a surplus in your tuition account, you'd be able to use it for a down payment on a home, right?
Yeah. So I mean, this is the way I look at it. Let's make it Florida-centric a minute, okay? But this is actually a national piece of legislation. So Florida-centric, if your young man or young daughter did well enough to be able to get, say, 100% Bright Futures, and then maybe you went ahead and did prepaid or some form of prepaid, or they were able to get some scholarship money. So now they've gone out, they've used Florida prepaid at the expense of the taxpayers, but the benefit of from a state program, and now they've been able to get some scholarships. So let's say mom and dad's 529 plan didn't get touched. Then why not let them pivot and use that money as a down payment assistance solution and, you know, allow a kid who worked hard or even worked hard and put themselves through school to be able to take that 529 money and use it as a down payment. So, or a mortgage assistance plan. So it's crazy this wasn't already the law of the land, but, you know, home ownership, you've heard me say it before, I think it's the most powerful force for good. I think people stay out of trouble. I think they show up to work. They take care of that investment when they own something of that magnitude. So why not think outside of the box and allow them to do a little bit more with that money that is theirs in the first place?
Yeah, and I'm with you. It makes sense to me. It's also, I think, a little bit of a, like you say, Florida-centric, because how many other places in the country have the very affordable college rates that we have? You know, I know a lot of places in the country, I think the average person's like, what you mean, education fund surplus? Like, that's going to be alien language to them. But, hey, where it exists, you know, why not? Exactly right. Why not free that up a little bit?
Yeah, it's exciting. So, I mean, we're just, and y'all, please, look, I'm you know, accessible. Ideas that you've got to be able to manipulate existing federal programs. You know, my door is always open to ideas. This came from a buddy of mine, a Greek by the name of Pete Belazos, who sent this idea to me. And so, I mean, this came from a friend. It could be just as much coming from a constituent. So, you know, y'all please engage.
Did you get a text from Mike yet? I did.
No, not yet.
I did. Yeah. It's funny.
I don't think you had your radio transmitter up powerful enough. Turn it up a little bit more and say it all over again.
That's funny. Hey, the Trump RX thing. I've read some analysis of this that makes it sound like, you know, maybe it's not going to have that sweeping of an effect. I've got a kind of a wing nutty idea here that I'm sure that, you know, the lawyers would fight me tooth and nail on this, but hear me out. I love the concept of the most favored nation rate. You know, the idea that if you charge a rate to the Canadians or the Nigerians or whatever, then the people here at home should not have to pay a higher rate than that for a prescription drug. But here's my trade-off on this. Here's how I think you accomplish that. That's the bargain when we protect your patent. We're going to grant you a patent, and we're going to protect it.
That's right.
And the trade-off is you get patent protection because you're offering to us, the public, the, you know, America, that you're going to give us the drug at no greater rate than you charge anybody else. That seems like a really obvious trade-off to me.
Well, again, I'm not a patent attorney, and
right.
I've never filed a patent before, but I would think we would need a change in at least patent law in order to get that type of status. But makes sense to me. I mean, you're having the protection of the world's largest economy,
right,
to ensure that your formula is protected for the 17 years that it's going to be on patent. So, I mean, it's at least another lane for protection and leverage and negotiating.
Right. I mean, I love that it's in the Constitution that we protect people's, you know, copyrights, trademarks, patents. That's good. But should we do it for nothing, or should we just, you know, and well, here's an opportunity for us to do it for something that is for the public good. And, you know, hey, look, if you don't want to give us the cheap rate, then, you know, why do we need to give you patent protection? I mean, that, again, that just seems, that seems like an opportunity for me, or to me. Talk a little bit about the Blue Angels hangar funding and the funding that's going to go to the Navy Boulevard reconstruction. Is it $12 million and $3 million? Do I have these numbers right?
Correct. So, $3 million in Navy Boulevard for enhancements, and then $12 million to go towards the Blue Angels hangar. Essentially, they're like tagged dollars. Those dollars can only be used for restoration purposes, replacement purposes of the Blue Angels hangar. And so the price on it is a moving target. If you look at the hangars that were built out at the airport, the current airport, they were, I believe, they're each under $100 million. But the way things have to be built going through the Department of Defense, they cost, you know, multiples of that. So
right.
This was one of the great things about having Hun Cao, the Undersecretary of the Navy, down a few weeks ago, is he's, you know, trying to find other ways in order to speed up infrastructure, because I'll tell you, the bureaucracy of the Pentagon, I mean, people will have passed away before we even break ground on something that should have been replaced 25 years ago. So we're just trying, there's just so much of a reset button that's got to hit in different levels. That's what the president was fussing about the other day, with just the defense industry in general, is, guys, you're not producing enough. You're not getting enough of rolling stock out on the market for our users to want to be able to get their hands on. So and fixed capital outlay construction is no different.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the Pentagon, and I know this is not really, it's not a local issue, it's not a Petronas issue, it's nothing, but there are so many negative stories about procurement, particularly shipbuilding, all these things. There was one good news note late last week that the new Abrams, it's going to be a hybrid, so it can run in basically whisper mode, is actually kind of ready to start, they've got the demo out and they're ready to build it, and that's like ahead of schedule and under budget, which is kind of an amazing thing to think about for anything that the Pentagon does. So just throw one little good news note out there about that. What the CIA fact book going away, the World Fact Book, and also the deleting of the entirety of the White House president's Twitter feed from prior to his administration. It's not even going to keep the first administration. It's going to get rid of all of that. I don't love the government eliminating information. I get the argument about it's our policy and we don't want to have any unclarity about it. But I mean, the fact book was just like a giant encyclopedia of world facts. Why would that go away?
Yeah, now I'm not familiar about its departure, but I'm happy to look into it and ask questions. But it sounds like you're more informed about it than I am. Unfortunately, sometimes if I'm not sitting on that particular committee, that you're speaking in, then I'm going to be a week behind it just because I'll be immersed in what I'm specifically sitting on. I didn't realize that the president or the administration was trying to archive the Twitter files. But who knows what the motivation is for that? Maybe Elon wants to save server space for Gronk. I have no idea.
Yeah, it was just kind of I don't really care about this video thing with the Obamas and all that. I think that's a way overblown story. But it seems to have fallen in the wake of that everything is going to be archived internally where you can public records request it, but you won't be able to just go look at it, which I think is a loss of access. And, you know, the fact book, too, is kind of like just kind of suddenly got and obviously, if you don't know anything about it, that's no big deal. Can't know everything. I know that. Last thing I wanted to ask you about, just kind of because it was the weekend. We had the Super Bowl, and I know you are a country music fan. We talked about this before. I assume you watched the Super Bowl because I know you're a football fan. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did, and I was rooting for the Patriots, and they got totally embarrassed. But that's okay. It was exciting but the best thing about it, I thought, was Devon Witherspoon, Pensacola's own, stripping the football. Had a massive interview thereafter. I think it's like the first real interview that happened live on NBC. So, I mean, I got chills just telling you this because, I mean, I get excited about when a young man, comes from our part of the country, plays on the biggest athletic stage and football, makes a play that obviously is pivotal to turning around or cementing a victory. And you see this young man just, telling the whole world about how proud he is of their work ethic and what they did. So congratulations, Seahawks.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It was really neat seeing him get interviewed. God, he played a great game, too. Part of that, like you said, that one strip play was amazing. One of the early sacks was amazing. He's so fast.
Yeah.
And, graduating Pine Forest, and he's just a local kid. And I love that he talks 100% like he grew up here. If you didn't know he was from here, you would know he was from here by the way he talks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so give us your play-by-play about why you watch Bad Money live exclusively.
Well, you watch TPUSA, right? You didn't watch, I assume you didn't watch Bad Bunny at all? You switched channels? Because you're a country fan.
I have. The only thing I know about Bad Bunny is what you were kind of alluding to at the end of our pre-show conversation. That's all I know.
Yeah.
If Bad Bunny walked in, I wouldn't know who he is.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either. And I was not a hater. I was not against this. I didn't think there was a problem with having him as a halftime show. I just found it boring. I don't know the music. I don't particularly like the music. The show was sort of low-key. It was like somebody was setting a musical up on the stage. And it was... It was fine. It was creative, but it was a halftime show, but it didn't capture me. But I had the same reaction to the TPUSA because I'm not a country fan, and I didn't find anything there for me either. I assume country fans loved it because I know from John and David, and I guess from you love that one.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was fine. I mean, we switched over to OAN and watched it streaming there. And, and then when it was over, we switched back. It seemed like it was a little bit of a delay, so we missed the first couple minutes of the second half because of it.
Well, you didn't miss much. especially if you're a Patriots fan. Jimmy Patronis, he's our congressman from District 1, Northwest Florida. Jimmy, thanks as always for the time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, Mike hasn't reached out. You didn't get his attention with our conversation. All right, thanks.
I bet he will. Jimmy, thanks. All right, John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Let's see here. If you're on I-10 eastbound, between 9 Mile and Highway 29, expect about a 12-minute delay in that area. Also, Highway 29 just south of 9 Mile going all the way to the interstate going southbound, experiencing about a 15-minute delay in that area. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. If you need air conditioning, heating, electrical, or plumbing work done on your home, those are all kind of the big complicated inside your house repairs, and Peden does all of that. Because kind of once you do one, you might as well start to learn how to do the others. And that's basically what Robert Peden did, starting the company in 1969, Panama City, expanding both territorially and in product line. It was AC in the beginning, but now they're everywhere from Tallahassee all the way to